Chapter 30. On the way back, the plan was to drop both Val and Philia off at the settlement where she lived. The evidence was in. Val was certainly the last surviving member of the ancient order of Seafeed believers, the small child who, because of an illness, caused his mother and self to miss the plane which crashed and killed all the others, including his father and siblings. Val was invited to join the settlement for a visit, before his more formal induction in the future. If he was apprehensive, he hid it well. Philia was nervous enough for the both of them. She had found him, but he was by no means a saint. His heart was well-intentioned, but his past was more than checkered. It was positively plaid. She was rolling over the introductions in her head. "Mom, Dad, Milgazia, I'd like to introduce my friend and punk supreme, Val Gov. Oh, don't mind the studs, rings, and piercings, or the tattoos or chains, leather, or the fact that he's on parole, and not for the first time. I mean, he didn't actually kill anybody. Oh, yeah, that was going to go over good." Lena looked closely at her friend. "You okay, Philia? You don't look so hot." "Oh, I don't know," Philia's voice wavered. "I was just trying to think of what to say. How much to say." "Say?" Lena wondered. "What's to say? I'm sure Phil held back no secrets about Val. They know what's coming, but they don't know the who part. That's up to him." "It is his life, Philia, and you're not responsible for its outcome. So cheer up and enjoy the fun, eh?" "Okay, you're right. But it affects my life too," Philia whispered. "How's that? Oh no, don't tell me. If it's romance, leave me out of it." Lena backed off and closed her mouth. Amelia was bubbling over with excitement, which was not infectious. The boys were a bit tired. As Gowrie turned the RV onto the road entering the settlement, he noticed a gate in the distance blocking the way.
"Looks like the guards are out, Philia," he remarked and came to a stop. "You'd better come up here."
Philia spoke a few words to the gatekeeper. They must have been expected, because the gates opened and the RV rolled onwards. Philia sat on the edge of Val's seat, directing Gowrie through the maze of roads and cottages. "Oh, that's it, where the small crowd is gathering," Philia pointed out unnecessarily.
"Okay, Philia,"
said Gowrie, as he pulled alongside and parked. Everybody got out. Philia handled the introductions quickly and without undue stress. Lena agreed to share a bite to eat before they headed out, but Gowrie said no. He was the driver, it was getting dark, and he was charged with getting everyone home safely. Lena, amazingly, acquiesced. They said their farewells, promised to call, and left. Gowrie drove. Zelos handled Eiderbantle to stay awake, and Zell, music. Lena and Amelia sang along with the tunes or joined in the chatter. By the time they entered Saerun, Lena and Amelia were asleep, and Zelos very nearly so. Zell recommended dropping off Zelos and himself, then Amelia and the RV. Gowrie agreed.
"Yeah, Phil said he'd drop me off, or let me borrow a car. And Lena, too. Better leave her be. She needs her sleep."
They kick-started Zelos, and left him at the door to his practice room.
"We'll unload tomorrow. The RV'll be locked in a heated garage tonight, so the music stuff'll be okay," advised Gowrie.
No argument there. Zell waved and went to his own door, locking it securely behind him. When Zelos entered his home that evening, he found another envelope. His hands shook as he tore open the seal and read the note. "When the bells jostle in the tower, the hollow night amid, then on my tongue a taste is sour of all I ever did." He was exhausted. He did not need this. It was more than he could handle. There was only one person he felt he could turn to. He climbed the stairs to the loft and sat at his terminal.
Instant messaging on. To Zell Goddess.
Zelos.
I got another poem tonight.
He waited a minute, then received a response.
Zell, you okay?
Zelos,
no.
Zell, need company?
Zelos, yes, he's in the bell tower. He's here.
Zell, call McGuinn. I'll be there ASAP.
Zell, are you calling McGuinn?
Zelos, I don't know the number. You do.
Zell, okay, I'll call and come over.
Instant messaging, off. 2 minutes later, there was a knock on his door. Zelos opened it, but it wasn't Zelgadis. Zell started to dial the number by memory, but the line was in use. Oh yeah, he had the internet up on his computer. His father didn't see the need for an internet line and a telephone line. Dinosaur. Zelos had his own line. By the time he got logged out, and all that done, he thought, running out the door, he could already be at Zelos's and call from there. He was very logical. But unfortunately, his judgment was in error this time. Gowrie called Zell's new number. Zell had left his bag in the RV. Gowrie hadn't noticed until he'd been dropped off at Lena's with more bags than either of them claimed. Now, he simply wanted to be sure that Zell would be up to open the door when he dropped it off on his long about way home. No answer. Busy signal.
That's strange. He must be calling someone. I'll try Zelos's number. No answer on his cell phone. That's odd. He takes that into the bath.
Gowrie wondered.
Better just head on over.
Zelos's door was ajar, so Zell pushed in. Gowrie loped over to Zell's. He was not pleased to see the front door standing open. Zell and Zelos were fanatical door lockers. He plunged into the dark house and tore up the stairs to Zell's room, dropping his duffel bag. No Zell. The only light came from the glowing computer screen. Gowrie read the messages and his stomach churned. This did not look good. Again, he tore down the stairs, three at a time, and made it to Zelos's door in two strides. The door was wide open, and no one was home.
Gotta get Lena.
Gowrie banged on Lena's front door. For God's sake, I'm coming. Who the hell? Gowrie, what's wrong? You just left. She demanded as she tried to wrap her bathrobe tighter. In answer, he grabbed her wrist and pulled her along.
Hurry, they're both gone. Zelos got another note of some kind. Zell must have gone over. Doors were wide open. I got a bad feeling.
She nodded, broke free, ran back inside and out again, pulling on her jeans and buttoning up her coat. They glanced at each other, and then she broke into a run alongside his long strides. Zelgadis knew something was wrong before he crossed the threshold. The practice room was void of any sign of Zelos, and, of course, the door had been left open. His keen hearing caught the sound of a footfall outside the door. Zell spun around in time to see a man, seconds before he covered his mouth with a gloved hand. The stranger rammed him against the wall so hard he nearly blacked out, just long enough for the man to handcuff his hands behind his back.
"What an odd-looking character you are," the man whispered in Zell's ear. "What a catch. Two for the price of one."
Zell was yanked off his feet and pushed out the door. He stumbled, but didn't fall.
"Where's Zelos?"
Zell spat, a rising fury building inside.
"I'll show you," answered the man, as he pushed the struggling boy into a car parked in the dark.
Zell fell against the front side door. The rear door flew open. But before he was kicked sprawling into the back seat, he noticed Zelos's purple hair. He was propped up in the front seat, slumping towards the window, eyes shut.
"More head trauma. Just what he needs," Zell thought, ignoring his own throbbing headache. He moved to the door, reaching for the handle. It was locked, of course. The man opened the front door, and for a moment, the car light shone on his face before he slammed the door shut and pulled away from the curb. He was a lean, well-built man of about 45, with neatly trimmed hair graying at the temples. He moved gracefully and had surprising strength for his size.
"You're Dubois," Zell said, as if it was a curse.
"You're a smart boy. If you want to stay alive and see your friend alive as well, you'll sit still and make no sudden moves," Dubois said through clenched teeth. He raised his right hand and displayed a wicked-looking knife as proof. "I know how to use this, and just barely keep you alive," he sneered. Zell sank back into the seat, helpless, and hating that man as much as his life. He had seen his handiwork on Zelos's chest and back.
"Should have logged off the damn computer and made that call to the police. Another mistake to pay dearly for," he thought darkly.
The car swiftly pulled away from the curb and sped down the block. The drive was a short one. Zell recognized the parking lot. The high school. Dubois drove up to an unlit corner, turned off the ignition, and yanked Zell out of the back seat. He shoved him into the dark, where he fumbled a few seconds, opening a door, then grumbled, "Go on, move it. There's some stairs to the right. Go up." Zell stumbled, catching his toe on the first step unexpectedly, and fell onto the hard metal steps. Without his arms free to protect him, all he could do was twist his body and take the blow to his shoulders and legs. "Gah!" he groaned. That shoulder muscle had already been bruised from the fall in October. Now he didn't think it was just bruised. Pain shot across his back and numbness down his arm. "Get up. Get moving, or I'll start carving here in the dark." Somehow, Zell found the strength to block out the pain and stood, wavering. Then he began the ascent, one step at a time. He started to shake. He was wearing a shirt dampened by sweat and chilled by the near-freezing temperature. His head throbbed and his arm hung lifeless behind his back. He climbed 47 steps in the dark before reaching a small platform in front of a door. There, he carefully lowered himself to rest and await his fate. He didn't have to wait for long. He could hear Dubois' heavy footfalls coming up the steel steps as he carried Zelos over his shoulder. At the platform, he opened the lock and kicked open the door. Before he could kick Zell in too, the boy clambered to his feet and stepped into the bell tower. Zell could make out a few things in the moonlight. A mattress, trash, power cords, and boxes. Dubois dropped the still unconscious Zelos to the mattress and lit a small lantern. Zelos was on his side. His head wound was reopened and blood was seeping onto the blanket on the mattress.
"You have to stop the bleeding. He's been hurt there before."
Zell began, oblivious to his own pain. Dubois turned his debased gaze upon Zell.
"Hold still," he demanded,
as he unlocked the manacle around Zell's healthy arm and relatched it onto Zelos's limp one. Dubois seemed preoccupied and nervous as he left them and busied himself with power cables. The reason the electric bells no longer tolled was because the power had been rerouted to power his small refrigerator and whatever other devices he was now involved with. Zell looked around for a towel or even sheets to tear up. Nothing. With a great deal of pain and effort, he ripped off his own shirt and tore it into strips, bending his face to their attached arms and tearing with his teeth. One bunch of shirt strips he folded. The others he tied together, and then used them to tie the folded wad over the oozing wound. He had just finished when Dubois returned. Gowrie grasped Lena by the arm and hustled her up the block. They could see the door to Zelos' place wide open. That was a bad sign. Gowrie entered first, flicking on the light. Another vehicle slowly pulled up in front of the house, turned off its headlights, and parked. Blood on the floor, a heavy stick beside it. Lena picked up a folded paper lying a few inches away and read the poem aloud. "A car," she said, hearing a door slam. "But their parents are gone, aren't they?"
"If it's his mother, I'll go check," he said,
halfway to the house in three strides. Lena decided to check the loft area. There, she read the disturbing communique between the two missing friends. She also saw another disquieting sight. The desktop was strewn with more notes, each with its own piece of poetry. "Why didn't he say anything to us? Why keep all these a secret?" Gowrie reached the door seconds after Zelis. She was surprised to find him running up and panting at her door.
"Gowrie, I believe. If you're looking for Zelos, I think you'll find him at..."
Gowrie had never seen the principal of his school before, so he did not recognize her as such. Just the most incredibly beautiful woman he'd ever had the pleasure to meet face to face. In spite of that minor mental detour, he stayed on track and reported the crime.
"He's gone, and Zell got us too. They sent email. Zell said he's in the bell tower. The door was open, blood on the floor, and a note with a poem."
Gowrie was both winded and not sure of all the facts, but Zelis got the message. Zelis blanched, and her hand shook as she pointed to the practice room. "Find his cell phone, and call the police. Tell them to go to the high school's bell tower. The principal will have the door open. Tell them to send paramedics. Give them both boys' names. Hurry, I'll be out in a minute." Gowrie leapt into action.
"Lena, find his cell phone and call the police."
"Already done. Yeah, Zelos. I don't know what the hell his last name is. And Zelgatus Greywords. What, Gowrie, bell tower? Yeah, the principal will meet you at the high school bell tower and..." "What? Okay, send paramedics." "Why?" "'Cause the guy who's kidnapped them is a maniac, and there's blood all over the place here. So hurry!" Zelis ran upstairs. She stuffed her gun in her jacket pocket and woke up Beast. "Come on, that's a good boy. Time for a workout." She crammed two flashlights into her other pockets. One was a lantern style with flash setting. Equipped satisfactorily, she pushed the door open for her wolf dog and jogged back to her car.
"We're coming too," demanded Lena, as she pulled open the back door and jumped in.
Zelis sat at the wheel as Beast hopped into the passenger seat. She leaned over, shut the dog's door, and pulled away from the curb. Lena gasped. Before the door had closed, the light shone on the face that gave her nightmares.
"Principal Metallium? What are you doing?"
"Oh, my gods. You're Zelos' mother?" "Yes, dear. I'm sure I don't have to tell you how important it is to keep this a secret. Now, this is important. We beat the police. I want you two to stay in the car. When the police arrive, direct them toward my lights. And under no circumstances enter that building. Understand?" Both Lena and Gowrie nodded. Zelis drove the car to the same darkened parking lot and parked alongside Dubois' vehicle. Beast scuffled out behind her. "I'm leaving the lights on. See where they're pointing? There's a door to the tower that way. Send the police there." Zelis unlocked the outside door and jammed the lantern into it to keep it ajar. She set it to flash, waved to Lena and Gowrie, then disappeared into the darkness, followed by Beast. Beast smelled blood. Zell's and Zelos's. He loved those boys. He howled a long wail of wolfy woe, then bounded up the staircase. Zelgatus was nearly blinded by a spotlight glaring into his eyes. Dubois leered over a camcorder at the two boys. "This is an unforeseen piece of good luck. Beauty and the Beast. That's a good start. Now lay down on him and kiss him." Zell stared into the light. He was not going to be part of whatever depravity this evil man had in mind.
What? He's bleeding there. You want me to what?
Dubois stepped to Zell's side and kicked him in the rear. Zell smashed into his friend's unmoving form, stabbing pain from his damaged shoulder, turning him into a senseless mass. He heard Zello's moan faintly beneath him.
I'm sorry, he whispered into his friend's ear. But I promise you, this will end now.
Zell felt the palm of his hand get clammy as he used it to brace his body off Zelos's. Though he was shivering with cold, sweat drizzled down his back. He was scared. One look down at his friend, a friend who needed his help again, and he knew he had to take action, and being scared wasn't going to help. So he started to think. You, let me see that hideous skin of yours. Looks like someone already did a job on you, hissed the man's voice near Zell's face. What, tears? Good, those are good for the tape. Now lean in closer. Zell's brain was on full alert. There had to be a way out. He wasn't going to become a senseless victim of this insane man. He must try. First, he shouted in defense. I am the result of an accident. What you did to your son was diabolical assault and perversion of a sick mind. The cry of a wolf calling to his pack. Yes, smiled Zell. There was help on the way. Beast! The howl was followed by the tick-tick-tack of stiletto heels on metal. Zelus was at the landing, rattling the key in the lock. One last kick to the sticking door, and Beast bounded through the opening, teeth bared. He sniffed and growled a low threat. Zell rapidly sketched a plan in his mind. He tensed, ready to move the instant the wolf attacked. Dubois made his move to bring the long, wicked knife blade down toward the wolf dog's shoulder. Zell mustered his strength and booted the man in the back of his knees. He folded, and Beast sprang for his throat. The man hit the floor hard, knocking the knife out of his hand. Zell scrambled as fast as he could and stretched as far as his reach, limited by Zelos's dead weight, would allow. His nimble fingers touched the blade, then scraped it along the floor until he could hold it securely. Got it. Good boy, he crooned to the animal whose vice-like jaws held Dubois by the neck, motionless. He rolled his golden eyes towards Zell and whined a little, but never loosened his hold. One move and I'll start shooting, starting with the knees, Zelus hissed in controlled anger as she stepped into the tower room. Her eyes held no mercy. Her hands didn't quaver. Sirens, red flashing lights, and shouts suddenly filled the night. Zell heard the sound of heavy boots pounding up the stairs. McGuinn burst into the cramped tower room and stood a moment, taking in the scene. Hello, Zell said, relieved that the nightmare was concluding. You don't look so good. Zellos looks worse than me. He hasn't moved. The police officer looked over Zelus, then down at the prone man. I wouldn't move if I were you, mister. He's all yours, Mrs. Metallium, while I'm gone, he said to Zelus. I'm taking the boys down to the ambulance. She nodded. Beast held his position. Zell stayed by his friend, kneeling. I think my arm's broken. It's also connected to his arm, so I'll be careful. Here, this ought to help, the officer said as he unlocked the handcuffs with a master key. Can you manage the stairs, son? Yeah, Zell said as he stood shakily.
Where, Zell goddess? What's going on?
Zelos' eyes opened. We're going home, Zelos. Everything's over. Everything's going to be all right. Though you'll need to thank your mother and Beast there for the best time to save.
Zell smiled, then started down the stairs, ahead of McGuinn and Zellos. Halfway down the stairs, Zell heard a gunshot. The loud explosion concussed through the tower. He winced. As he reached the door, he heard a second blast. Lena charged through the crowd of medics and police and started to throw her arms around him. God, Zell, you look awful! Your arm! What happened to your shirt? Gowri strode up, eyes sad with concern. Before he could say much, two paramedics pounced on Zell, taking him to a waiting ambulance. Lena hovered around Zell, catching bits of the story when he could speak. Gowri was close to the door when McGuinn exited, carrying Zellos. Gowri grabbed the attention of one of the other medics and helped his friend onto a waiting stretcher. "I see you're wearing Zell's stuff now," Gowri chuckled. Zellos touched the makeshift bandage and smiled weakly. "Oh yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I just... Where's Zell got us?" Gowri nodded to the ambulance. "All ready to go. Looks like you're both going to the hospital." "What? Okay, they want me out of the way. Lena's here too. We'll see you later." Another ambulance pulled up, waiting for instructions. McGuinn spoke to a couple of the officers, then ran into the building alone. He bounded up the stairs, two at a time. He dashed into the room. Zelis stood over Dubois, who lay still, one leg bleeding from the knee, a hole in his chest, and silenced by the dog bite puncturing his windpipe. "That was your last chance, dear," Zelis said lazily. McGuinn stopped her with a word and a clenched fist to the jaw. "What?" she screamed in surprise and pain. "Now it appears that you had to shoot him in self-defense, from the look of that mark across your face. But there are some officers coming up the stairs, so don't do anything stupid that will put you in prison and leave your sons without a mother." Dr. Adams was on call that night. He saw the pale faces and familiar shades of purple hair. "Emergency room, stat, brain scan on that one. X-rays here, here, and here for the other. They're patients of mine, and brothers, so keep them together. Same room, no visitors, even if it's their mother, until I sign off. Got that?" Zelgadas was resting quietly, arm in a sling, shoulder taped. There was a bandage on his forehead, over his bad eye, and countless bruises. One of his legs was bandaged, but he wasn't thinking about that now. He checked his watch. Midnight, December 31st. "One more second. Zellos, you awake? Happy birthday, big brother." Zell smiled at the purple-haired boy lying motionless on the bed beside his. "Birthday? Tonight?" "Yeah, it's morning, technically. And you are 18 years old. Congratulations," Zell whispered. "And you are Zelgadas? My brother?" "Yes, but that's a long story. Would you like me to tell you how that came about?"
"Yes. Tell me that story, Zelgadas."
"Oh, you can call me Zell. Everybody does."
"Zell, that's my name, isn't it?"
"Zell? No, Zellos. Nobody calls you that. I'm Zell. You are Zellos."
"Okay. Can I go to sleep now,
Zelgadas?" "Not yet. Dr. Abrams made that very clear. I get to annoy you. Besides, you want to hear my story, right?"
"Yes, the story. Tell me the story of how I got my brother, Zelgadas."
"All right. It was the end of September. The course assignments were out, and we all arrived a few days before classes to pick them out. Yes, you were there, and all our friends, too. But they weren't our friends yet. At least, we didn't know that they were going to be the most important people in our lives. I didn't even know you. Yet. Until that day."
"I demand to see him! I am his mother!"
Zelis demanded, pacing the floor in front of the receptionist's desk.
I am sorry, Mrs. Metallium, but the doctor's orders are no visitors until he signs off his approval, sniffed the nurse sternly. Grey Words, Mrs. Grey Words. So, where is Dr. Adams now? I will see him. He is with a patient. If you would take a seat, he'll be with you as soon as he can, the nurse said with finality.
Mrs. Grey Words, said the young doctor, panting slightly as he jogged up to the desk. It's been a very busy night. What can I help you with?
I want to see my son.
Which one? We have both registered tonight.
Zelos.
Can't do that. I'm sorry. He's being carefully monitored. He's very unstable, Mrs. Metallium. Grey Words, pardon me. For his own good. And I'm sure you want to see him recover his memory and use of his limbs, yes? Please go home and get some rest. I'll call you tomorrow and let you know if I think he's ready for visitors.
Zelgadis, I would like to see him. There can't be any objections to my seeing him.
His father is out of town. We were on our honeymoon. I came back to check on the boys. They had been on an overnight trip. I wanted to see how it went. And phone calls can be so impersonal.
Well, it's amazing, and very lucky for them. If you hadn't come home just when you did, well, if I'd gotten home earlier, I might have been able to prevent that entire dreadful event.
Yes, if only. Well, I will arrange to have Zelgadis move to my office. Nurse, please escort Mrs. Grey Words to my office. Thank you. Please excuse me.
Oh, Zelgadis, my poor sweet dear. How are you holding up?
Fine. Zelos is sleeping now.
Oh, I thought that was a bad thing.
It's okay for now. I'm tired too.
I won't keep you then. I had a question, though. Perhaps you could help me a tiny bit.
What?
The tape. The police have searched the entire tower for that videotape. It wasn't there.
Funny thing. I can't help that.
No?
You didn't ask about it, or...
What?
I wasn't thinking about anything but my best friend lying there bleeding, and my arm numb to the fingertips, and some perverted maniac with a knife. That's all.
You look tired, dear. Get some sleep, and we'll talk in the morning.
Zelos smiled. Perhaps he knows nothing after all.
Oh, joy. Zell muttered to himself.
Zelos?
Yes, Zelgadis.
I have it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
It?
I think so.
A tape. Is that it?
Yes. What shall I do with it?
I can't remember. A name.
Police Detective McGuinn?
Yes.
I gave it to him, actually. There's no place to hide it here. When you remember... I'll tell him what to do with it. Would you like me to tell you another story?
Yes. Tell me about the Slayers.
The Slayers. That's the name of our band. You are the drummer. Yes, you are the best. I play lead guitar. Gowrie, the tall blonde. Yes, he's the bass player. Val plays keyboards and synthesizer now. You bought it for him so he could put in some chimes and other special effects. You're a real nice guy, Zelos. We all think so. There are the girls, too. Amelia, Philia, and Sylphiel are backup singers.
What? She's making you a kimono. That's nice of her.
Yes, she's very pretty. Kinda looks like you. Ha ha. One more. Our leader, Lena Inverse. Yes, she has red hair. Short and feisty, that's her. She'll be thrilled to know she's not forgotten. Remember a girl named Kiki?
No.
That's okay. You will. You'll remember everything soon. Good morning, boys. How are you feeling? Asked the cheerful doctor, though he had spent a large part of the night on ER duty.
Morning.
Like shit, answered Zelgadis succinctly. Then, nodding over his shoulder toward Zelos, he added, he's still asleep.
Good. I'll check you first, then wake him up.
Oh, nasty bruises. More scars. You play guitar, right?
Well, you'll be able to again soon.
This shoulder was dislocated, and the bone bruised here and here, but not broken. 2 weeks, you'll be good as new, okay? I thought that would make you smile. Doctor, he remembers some stuff. Lena, for one. Something's bothering him. I think you should allow McGuinn to talk to us. It might help. You think so, Dr. Zelgadas? Well, I shall take your opinion under advisement. Now, Zelos. Good morning. Hey, you're waving your fingers. Great, that's a good sign. You are Dr. Adams, Zelos said sleepily. You bandaged my head a while ago, when I fell down a cliff in the park. Zelos smiled. Yes, I did, and again last night. I'd like to check that again. Ah, looks like it will heal just fine. How's the headache? Better? That is the best news. Can I get you anything? No. Yes, a policeman. Zelgadas knows who I mean. And a TV with a VCR. Whoa, I'm not Santa Claus, laughed the doctor. Santa who? Just kidding, laughed Zelos in return. For that joke, I'll buy you the VCR myself and get you the officer of the day.